All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire basketball podcast. That's pretty fast there. I'm speaking. I need to relax, slow down a bit. Jeremy Moss here. I do that a lot. I understand. And Eli Badger talking hoops and Utah State, right? The Aggies? Is that who we're going with today?
That's right. We got the Aggies coming up. Then one more, and then we're all wrapped up for these preview podcasts.
Depends what order you're listening to. Maybe there's 10 more. You just heard this is the first one.
That is true.
All right. So, check us out. Website, New Digs, if you haven't seen this over there, MWR.com. You can subscribe just to Aggie stuff or basketball stuff or any specific team sport at the moment you're on right now. Well, I guess football and basketball only, but give us a like. Go check out the page. Like our Facebook page, Twitter, all that fun stuff, MWC Wire. Not exactly cohesive, but we're close enough. If you search Mount West Wire, you'll find us, right?
Yeah, and we don't have Cody McEwen Wire yet, but
soon.
But
there's Lonzo Wire.
That's right. No Cody McEwen Wire, but we do have Utah State Athletics, so you can go check that out if you're an Aggies.
So if we make one for a basketball player, who would it be in the conference?
Well, I mean, last year it would be Nick Duncan,
clearly.
Obviously, but this year, probably Chandler Hutchison Wire, right?
If you got my best player, we need to see who does something crazy or just something interesting out there, because Nick Duncan was just that dude. We told you, the dude that chucked it, and he'd be good sometimes.
Or Eric Musselman Wire.
There you go.
Sure. Because he's quite the guy.
That's a perfect one. Him, the coach, Musk. Shirtless Musk, right? Mm-hmm. Drive-by
that's
dunk
right.
Musk. Ticket delivery guy Musk. He does it all. Hopefully
right.
Nevada head coach next year, Eric Musselman. But let's get to Utah State here. We're talking Aggies. We're not talking. If you want the Nevada show, we did that the other day. So go check out that and every other team we've done at the moment. So season starts this week with Utah State, who they had a couple exhibition games. But let's start with the media rankings. They picked them 8th. Was that kind of a surprise for you to be that low behind UNLV and a few others?
I mean, behind UNLV, probably that makes sense. I think they'd probably finish in the 8 and 9 range, so I thought they'd have a little bit more distance ahead of New Mexico, but I think that's probably a pretty fair ranking.
Because they lose Jalen Moore, is he in the G League at the moment, or is he overseas or something?
He's overseas,
okay.
Yeah.
We might do some sort of, we found a pretty good website, we might do kind of a twice a month update for pros, NBA pros or basketball pros, so that might be a possibility if we can find a reliable website that can track it easily.
That's the challenge, yeah.
Those things in Europe are tough, too. So I know a few people, but they lose him. But they have Kobe McElwain, who was he freshman of the year last year? Or is he all-freshman team?
He was freshman of the year, and he set a number of Utah State freshman records as well. He was a really special player, and it's nice for Utah State to have him back.
So when you have him, he's going to be clearly the dude for this team. Like, they put them 8th, but I think he's a guy. Like, I know I mentioned this on a few other shows about who could be kind of like the first, going back to Fresno, Montel Harris. I think this is a definite guy who could be that type of player for Utah State, where he could score a ton of points. Because he's like, Sam Vecenie over the Athletic has him, number 18th lead guard in the country? Something like that?
Yeah, he was in the top 20 rankings, and he's been collecting a lot of those preseason accolades, which is pretty cool. But I mean, we've mentioned this on a number of podcasts last season. Utah State has had its fair share of stars the last few years. They had Jalen Moore, as you mentioned, and he was excellent. But, I mean, outside of Moore, they really didn't get a ton of contributions and production from other players. So they have their star once again in McEwen, and obviously a nice sidekick in Sam Merrill. But you have to have a supporting cast, and it's nice for the Aggies to have a star because that isn't always something that you come by in the Mountain West Conference, but you have to have production elsewhere.
So let's go to the coaching here. This is what, year 3 of Tim Duryea? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, he took over, as I mentioned, the used car salesman, Stu Morrill, with the rim glasses and the elbow patch jackets.
Good old Stu.
He, 20-game Stu, right? 20-plus game a year Stu. But the one thing that's I like with the new coach, I guess sort of new, they've actually play decent opponents, because Stu Morrill would play, he would challenge Air Force for the worst schedule of the year.
Oh yeah,
if that. And so like they're getting there, because some of these games are still in play. So that's what you want to see for this team, where they have a couple opportunities. Like, I know we're going into the schedule, but we'll get to other players and things as well. But They got like a decent Weber State. They got Gonzaga, which will be interesting. But that's about it, really. They got BYU in Logan, which could be good. University of Utah. So they have a couple good teams, but they got Life Pacific. Who's Life Pacific? Do you know?
Pacific I mean, it's Life? Not Georgia Pacific, it's not Pacific, so that's good.
It's insurance company, Pacific Life.
At Valpo's a decent game as well.
Oh, Valpo, so, yeah, but they lost.
The new Missouri Valley team. Name? Yeah, Alec Peters is gone, so man. That hurts. But, I mean, that's still a decent program. So a couple nice teams on the schedule. Last year's schedule was better. They played Purdue, Texas Tech, and BYU all on neutral sites. So those were three quality games. So it's not great, but it's not
Doesn't
awful.
Doesn't Montana State have a guy who's like a good NBA potential player, I believe? Don't they have some guy on their team?
Yeah, Tyler Hall. I think he averaged around 23 points per game last year, but he should be selected in the NBA draft this coming spring. Excellent player.
So when we think about their schedule, it's nothing that stands out, really. Like, Montana State game will be interesting, but they're not going to beat Gonzaga. They're probably not going to beat Valpo. BYU and Logan, maybe, but BYU, there are some issues with Tyler Hawes and his eligibility. They weren't very good last year. Lose Eric Mika, so that game, maybe I'll try to go to that game. I've never been to a game in Logan. Maybe I should, because I heard it's a rocking place to go. And they got Utah and Salt Lake, which will be interesting. But I don't know. It's this team, though. Like I said, if it's just McEwen and what's his name? Sam
Merrill.
Yeah, that's right, Sam Merrill. I was thinking, like, it's not the same coach, Merrill. What? But
yeah, that
without those guys, it's like after them, like who's next guy up then? Like who's 3, 4, and 5? Do they have a 3, 4, and 5 that's reliable?
I really like D'Angelo Isby. He's a JUCO transfer who will be playing his first season in Logan this year. He exploded the other night in an inter-squad scrimmage. Yeah, I think he had about 27 points, and he's played well in Utah State's exhibition. So he's going to have to step up. And it's difficult because this team has already suffered two major injuries. Their key center, who was supposed to start this year, Norbert Janicek, he suffered a season-ending knee injury, so he had to receive surgery. He'll miss the entire season. And you also have Julian Pierre, who will be out about a month or so with a calf tear, and he's a solid backcourt role player for them. So two major injuries right off the bat, and it's tough because this front court, even before these injuries showed up, losing Jalen Moore, they needed to get some solid production out of their freshman as well as Quinn Taylor. And this is an undersized front court that has some serious question marks, and especially after they lose their biggest guy, Norbert Janicek, because now they only have one player that's over 6'8". So lack of size and just a lot of question marks on that front court. So it'll be interesting to see how the rotation sorts itself out, but definitely some things that need to be figured out by the time conference play rolls around.
Speaking of size, have you read Ken Palm's piece from The Athletic the other day or from last week?
I believe
so, yeah. He basically
put,
like, I just saw it right now, so I didn't read the whole thing. But basically, we mentioned, what was it, last year, Nevada, they rebound well, but size wasn't their main thing overall. It's like, basically, even if it's just one inch or even two, that could actually play a huge difference. So if they're undersized and they're going up against guys, teams like UNLV with Brandon McCoy has size. Aztecs will have size and length on defense. There's a couple of teams in conference, not Nevada really, but they're athletic. But you should go and read this. If you have a subscription, go check it out. But basically, kind of going through how the height could be just that one inch, which makes sense because how close are people getting to a block half the time? We're getting out rebounding the guy or diving for a loose ball where you see two hands on the edge going after it. So I just thought that was an interesting piece. You should probably, anything he writes, you should go read for Ken Palm, but I just kind of glanced at this, and it's like, it goes into like, how many basketball players have a link to the Center of Disease Control for the average male growth less than a quarter? Okay, who's going to put this in a basketball article? Wow. According to the Center for Disease Control, the average male grows less than a quarter inch between 19 and 20. The CDC doesn't publish information beyond age 20. And then blah, 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 a few other things. And so, like, they mentioned a guy, who is it? Blah, 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 blah. There's, I guess, a group of a dozen who grew an inch and a half, which is an anomaly, apparently, from 19 to 20. So
this was about the Tennessee team.
Yeah, right? It looks like Tennessee. I'm looking as part of it, too, yeah. So it's interesting. Mm-hmm. So just go and read. It's always a different take on basketball. We know he's the analytic guy, but this is kind of way out there. Not necessarily pace or tempo or adjusted strength of schedule per opponent on playing on a mountaintop or something, or aircraft carrier more appropriate, I guess, for hoops. But yeah, it's always interesting to see. But if they're undersized, that's going to be just another thing that's going to be against Utah State.
Yeah, it will be. And we talked, our first podcast was about Air Force and their lack of size and overall athleticism. And even for Air Force, Frank Tuohy, who will play number five and start number five for the Falcons, he was 6'9". And Utah State won't have many, if any, players that will receive consistent playing time that are over 6'9", or most of them are 6'8". So obviously, like I said, a lot of question marks for this team. They will lean on D'Angelo Isby, who will be should be a breakout player for this team. I think he's going to be a solid player. Alexis Dargington will probably need to step up in the front court. Kobe McEwen and Sam Merrill, obviously the go-to guys. But just knowing the last two seasons with Tim Duryea, he's had more talent on this roster the last 2 years than he probably does right now. And he wasn't able to reach any postseason tournaments in those two seasons. So I guess it's reasonable why the media and coaches were a bit skeptical coming into the year with this Aggies roster.
So with just kind of go back to coaching here, Tim Duryea, third year, like clearly, I know the team, like not like I said this a few times before, Utah State is still, they shouldn't be, but they're at the point where they're still playing, catching up to the competition. Because it's not so long ago, they were in the Big West. As of, it's been 14 years, I guess, since they've been in the Big West.
Yeah, 05 season.
Oh, 05, okay, sorry, I was looking at 03 here for some reason, but Big West, WAC, and now Mountain West, which is slightly better than that WAC back in the day, but because they stepped in the Big West, obviously won a tournament game or two, always getting 25-plus wins every year, 30 wins, I think, once or twice, going to the WAC, still being very good and being very competitive, but it still takes time. I would think at some point, let me ask you this, is it just a competition-wise where they haven't been able to twofold, new coach, and then with what even Stu Morrill wasn't able to exactly keep up to what they were doing in the Big West and WAC days?
It's probably a mixture of a number of things. Going from Larry Eustace to Stu Morrill, and not to slight him, but to Tim Duryea, that's a difficult jump, and especially when Tim Duryea is the one that's coaching in the most difficult conference. So I don't know, I would ask you this because I think it's probably a valid question. Do you think that the MWC is that much more challenging than the WAC in the mid-late 2000s or the Big West in the early 2000s?
Big West, obviously, it's not as good, clearly, because that makes sense. But the WAC, let me see who's in the WAC a couple years ago, because here's the thing, you had Nevada, Fresno State. They were all in the WAC a couple years ago. You also had San Jose State. So it's like most of the WAC, but then you also had, like, the WAC's changed dramatically. Who was in the WAC, in the WAC with them? You had New Mexico State, Idaho, right? Who else is in the...
I'm
talking about, no, like when Utah State was there, from 05 to 12.
Well, the year that they won 30 games in 09, Utah State had a 14-2 record that was best in the conference. Mm-hmm. Then it was followed by Nevada, Idaho, Boise State, New Mexico State, and Louisiana Tech.
Oh, yeah, Boise
Tech,
State, yeah.
As well as San Jose State, Hawaii, and Fresno State. So three other programs that are either fully committed to MWC or in just football. So yeah, it was never a cupcake conference, but I think MWC is a sizable step up, and Tim Duryea's had his work cut out for him just with knowing what Stu Morrill did for almost 20 years with this program, consistently winning 25 games and even 30 twice. So yeah, it's difficult. And this year I think will be very determinant of what's going to happen in the future for Tim Duryea, because I think he's probably approaching the hot seat, honestly. And I know that's only year three, but this program hasn't been to a postseason tournament since 2013, and that's not
2012
NCAA 2012. Tournament.
Yeah, 2012 where they're the CIT runner-up.
I mean, see, it's okay, that's what, 5 seasons that they've gone without even any postseason tournament, not just the NCAA tournament. And that's not typical for this program, because from 1998 to 2011, I want to say they went to 10 NCAA tournaments. So that's a significant drop-off for this program.
Here's exactly what they have, really quick, because I have Stu Morrill's wiki page here.
Okay.
They went to 8 NCAA tournament games since 98. They had only one losing record since 98 to 2005. Stu Morrill had a huge streak of just Morrill himself, 20-plus wins from 99 to 13, including the 231 seasons. They had, I thought they had an NCAA tournament win. They had one NCAA tournament win. I think they beat, didn't they beat Arizona and Boise, I think it was, in 2000?
If that was, I'm not sure about that.
2001. They beat, I'm going to look real quick because I'm curious. Hold on. Utah State, Ohio State. That's a 12 seed. Okay. They beat Ohio State and Greensboro, so I was way off. Never mind. But they went eight NCAAs, and then they went to NIT 1, 2, 3, 4 times. So from 99 to 11, or 12, they're in a tournament, and from 99 to 11, NCAA or NIT, but usually NCAA. And so part of it is that they rack up wins because we've seen what Stu Morrill schedules. But again, the competition, this is year 5 in the Mountain West, and I think you're right that Duryea could be on the hot seat because Utah State, with him, he's only 30-32 record overall. Utah State does not have I guess they do have a winning record overall in the Mountain West play with Morrill and Duryea, but he's not going to get fired after this year, but people aren't happy because nobody's showing up to games at the Spectrum because of how the drop-off.
I honestly wouldn't guarantee that he's going to be back next season because, I mean, I think a lot of things have to go wrong for this team. But, I mean, things are shaky right now. So if Utah State finishes as bad as 10th or maybe even 11th, and I don't think they will finish 11th. They have much more talent than San Jose State or Air Force. But there's got to be a point where Utah State athletics department looks at what we're looking at right now, the team history, and sees that the last 5 years have been very mediocre after coming off all these NCAA tournament appearances. And I would just have to believe that Tim Duryea probably has the warmest seat among MWC coaches right now because he's in a tough spot.
He also was the safe hire because he's promoted from within a couple years ago. They didn't really go anywhere else to find a coach. They just stuck with...
I think he was one of the longest tenured assistant coaches for Utah State, so he had been with the program for quite a while.
Okay, did that work well for Craig Neal? No. Is that going to work well for Brian Dutcher? Maybe. I don't know. But Duryea right now, it's not the case. So we've had – this is the third coach in the conference the past couple of years that have had – took that one seat over, and success hasn't really been there.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very big season for Utah State because they have potentially a future pro basketball player. When Kobe McEwen, who could be excellent, he could probably finish on – the All-MWC first team if he's not already running for Player of the Year. And I just want to bring this up because I thought this was a very interesting story from over the summer involving Kobe McEwen. And there was a report that came out in July from Deseret News that reported that an AAU coach tried to shop away Kobe McEwen from Utah State, which was a very interesting situation, especially with all the FBI investigations going on right now with AAU and shoe companies. But basically, an AAU coach who had ties to McEwen, who's from Toronto, basically just tried to shop him away from Utah State and said that he wanted to transfer from Utah State, even though that wasn't the case. And McEwen wasn't aware of it, and McEwen's family wasn't aware of it. So he was it was unreported who the person was, but this person tried to, I would assume, try to take McEwen to a power conference school and put him in a better position to play pro ball, which is, I don't know if this will have any repercussions in the future, but it is definitely an interesting story for a player that is of McEwen's caliber, and especially after David Klett transferred just a couple days before the season, the year before that, it's tough. It's a really interesting story.
And he's done nothing with the University of Utah. It's like, come on. He could actually, having him on that team and give him the extra size they need and a good player, they'd probably be top, a couple spots higher, maybe at worst middle of the pack if they had Klett. But that was kind of a similar situation where somebody, I don't remember, do you remember how that was resolved or what exactly happened? It was kind of a similar situation. A coach related or either relative or former coach in high school or AAU was talking to like University of Utah and other schools to get him to transfer. Isn't that kind of what the ultimate result was?
I'm not sure about that from Collette, but I know that the people who were within Utah State were pretty shocked with what happened, especially just 48 hours before the season started. I remember seeing that pop up on my phone after I was coming out of work and seeing that David Collette was transferring from Utah State, and I was like, what? That is really confusing. And then he ends up at Utah, so that's salt in the wound for Utah State fans. He transfers to the rival program, so yeah, it just really interesting situations right now, and hopefully this doesn't impact McEwen's future, because you'd like to see him, if he does go anywhere besides Utah State, you'd hope it's into the NBA, but I guess we'll see what happens. Hopefully nothing transpires from this, and everything goes as planned for McEwen and his camp, but crazy stuff.
Do you think he really did not know? Because I kind of find that hard to believe.
I don't know, and I mean we can all assume things, but I mean there are some sketchy people that are involved with AAU and shoe companies that are honestly they're just trying to do things for their own good, put these talented teenagers into positions where they can be more profitable. So I wouldn't be shocked if this thing's happening, and we know it does too, because you have these talented players who
look what happened.
Yeah.
No, just look at the Louisville, Auburn, Arizona, mm-hmm. USC. Look, people, UNLV is looking through their program to see if there's anything, something going on. So we know it could happen. You'd usually just think the player would be somewhat in the know, or maybe this is clearly speculation, not fact or anything. I'm just throwing it out there. Here's maybe why he did not know and why he possibly could not know. This guy, the coach, was looking for getting him to whatever school, a better school. Whether it be university, a Pac-12 school out west, or something, Big 12 school. Maybe he wanted to get a deal in place, like we've seen people getting six figures, like the Bagman thing for college football, which is obviously not in hoops with all the FBI stuff. Perhaps he's looking for a deal to say he's going to get X amount of money if you can get him with Adidas or whatever, so he'll sign a pro deal and all that fun stuff that could come with it. Or you're not fun, but you know what I mean. All that comes with it. The reason they invest money in a kid to an Adidas school or Under Armour school is because, okay, he'll sign an Under Armour contract possibly, or Adidas contract in the NBA if he makes it that far, and then we'll get our investment back that way. So maybe he's looking for a deal, didn't find one, and maybe that's why McEwen didn't know. I'm just saying that's possible, or that could make sense for him not knowing, because why tell this kid who's 18 years old, hey, I'm looking to get you to another school. What's the reason behind it? Mm-hmm. I think we can both figure out it's some sort of a money situation or some sort of a – why would his coach do it? There's got to be a reason behind it. Is he going to get hired by the school that he goes to? Is he going to get money to go to that school? And maybe he didn't find a deal in place to get him to go somewhere else. That's clearly plausible for what we've seen the past few months. People wearing wiretaps in Las Vegas hotel rooms. It took them, and what is it, 2 years to work on this case?
I think it was about that.
I think it's clearly plausible at the worst to say he was looking for a deal and didn't find one. That's why McEwen didn't know. Because why would he come to him and say, yeah, I'm looking for another school? He's like, why? What do you mean? Instead of, hey, I got you going to Arizona and I can give you and your family $85,000.
Oh, so you're just saying the coach did, not McEwen.
No, what I'm saying is, like, it's kind of crazy what I'm thinking about, but why would he come to the kid and say, hey, we're looking for a new school for you?
Money.
Because then it gets into, he knows about what's going on. Not even just money, but talking to other schools. You can't do that unless you already said, I'm going to transfer, I'm going to leave, or a grad transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is the coach was looking for a school to go to, and why? He wants a deal of some sort. Something going on. Why tell Kobe that he's doing that until he'd come back and say, hey, Kobe, I got these three schools. Are you interested in doing this? That's why I'm thinking, like, why would he just throw it out there and get him distracted and whatever other stuff? But, again, this is clearly speculation, but it makes sense. He'd want to do it in place before he comes back to tell McEwen, here's what could happen.
It's very possible. And this, unfortunately, this goes on a ton because you have, and I don't know McEwen's background, but you have a number of players who come from, I mean, less than ample circumstances, who see these opportunities to go to these major programs and play 30 games and then head to the NBA. And I mean, it's pretty much everyone's dream who plays basketball. That's kind of the ideal scenario. You go to college, you're the star of the show, and then you go to the NBA and make millions. So you have these people that come along the way that try to throw these players off just so they can and make their own bank accounts or to get more recognition or popularity. And it's unfortunate because you catch these 18, 19, 20-year-olds who just honestly don't know better or think that this is the right way to go. So I don't know how this McKeown situation will sort out, if it hasn't already or if it ever will, but it's too bad you have these people that are doing things like this for the sake of their own well-being. But yeah, just really bizarre stuff, and it's crazy what the FBI has found the last few months that really will probably impact the future of recruiting as we know it for the coming years.
Yeah, we'll see. It's a who knows again. Even if you come from a decent background, if you're offered six figures, who that's kind of hard to turn down when you're eating, even as an athlete, okay meals. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but let's get back to the Aggies real quick. Let's wrap this up. So, how would you rate this? Like, kind of going by their schedule, going by what the talent they have, are they going to finish higher than lower than what the media predicted them at eighth place?
I think they're going to finish lower. I think they're going to finish in ninth. I would probably bump New Mexico up to eighth because I think that people are discounting the Norbert Janicek injury just a little bit because he was their big guy underneath. I was expecting him to have a big season for the Aggies this year. He's at 6'11", 240. He's their post presence that they needed to have this season, and he played really well last year, and he started a number of games, and you lose that big body, and you also have some more question marks in the front court, and we've seen in the past with this team that they can't rely on stars, and I don't think many teams in the Mountain West can really do that. So I think they're probably going to finish ninth in the league this year, and that would not translate to a postseason appearance for the fifth or sixth consecutive season.
Is it going to see, is Tim Duryea going to be back next year if they finish ninth place, which probably means like 12 wins?
I don't think so. If they finish as bad as ninth and things really start to spiral out of control, I can't guarantee that he would be back for his fourth season. And because of that, I think you'd probably see some of the players from this university transfer because there's just so many question marks. And there's some good talent on this roster, but like we've seen in the past, the coach gets fired, and like we saw at New Mexico, like we saw at San Jose State, then things start to unfold, and you have to rebuild the program back up. So I don't know how this season will sort out. Of course, none of us do, but I think that Tim Duryea has really got it figured out this year, and he's got a couple stars to lean on, but that supporting cast really has to show up, or things could get hairy quite quickly for Utah State.
All right, so that I'm a little more optimistic. The injury, if he's back for league play, which sounds like he should be, maybe the Aggies can make a run, but I don't know. I like Mac McCoby pretty well, but I don't know if he's going to be that good to get them to beat up on maybe Wyoming or New Mexico or even UNLV. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go that they'll finish right where the media predict them. I think they'll be better than New Mexico, but it'll be close, but not by much. So that's all I got for this particular show. Thank you for tuning in. Again, our new website looks awesome, I think, mwire.com. Check us out there. iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. Give us a review, right, Eli? Tell your friends.
That's right. I think we're probably one of the only Mountain West basketball-centered podcasts, and we're also one of the only Mountain West basketball-centered podcasts that has a unanimous 5-star rating on iTunes, so you can add to the pot there and give us another 5-star.
Well, hey, Rob Doster from College Basketball Talk wants a new podcast, so I turned him to our way. So hopefully maybe my tweets to him will be answered. If he'll take a list of maybe, hey, these guys know what they're talking about. At least Eli does, so we'll figure it out. You talked with Rob before. You should tell him to listen or something. He used your definitely. Stuff in your article he did for or he chatted with him about the transfer, so yep. He's familiar. So maybe, crossing fingers. Give us a retweet, Rob. We're calling you out. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, again, thanks for tuning in for the Aggies. And season starts soon. I know these last couple have been down to the wire, but they'll still be relevant for the first week or two of the season. So, yeah, Hoops is basically here in a couple days by the time you hear this, or maybe it's already here. But we end every show the same. Yes, we are very much biased against your basketball team.